Shana Tova. Stephen Wise is just down the street from Central Park, only a few blocks from Strawberry Fields. I like to walk in the park a lot. All seasons, rain or snow, it doesn't matter, I'll make my way there. Most of the time, Strawberry Fields is packed with people, taking photos of the mosaic of the word imagine, inlaid at the center of the walkway. Buskers sit on benches circling the area, playing Beatles songs, singing, "Come together right now." Now, I didn't grow up on the Beatles music. I was more likely to hear Louis Armstrong or Mario Lanza than Lennon. So to be honest, I really didn't get it at first. It was with a kind of removed curiosity that I observed the gatherings that happen in Strawberry Fields, day after day, year after year. But as time went by, I began to pay more attention to this unwritten ritual enacted by perfect strangers drawn to this spot from the far corners of the globe to play music and remember. I started to understand the meaning behind the flowers scattered across the ground, bringing the word imagine into focus. I listened harder, heard the emotion behind the singing, the longing for change in a broken world. Imagine we can still find each other across the continents and cultures. Imagine we can come together even right now, despite all that divides us. Imagine we each thought of ourselves as truly belonging to one another. And yet, in many ways, we are far away from these aspirations and may feel more alone, more isolated than ever. We are further removed from one another and no longer interact in the same ways. In our day-to-day lives, almost all of us rely on technology to mediate our interactions. And this has changed the way that we relate to one another. This happened so swiftly, so profoundly, I am not sure that we are even cognizant of it. Much of this use of technology is good. We can connect with people all over the world in different time zones. We can study with teachers who are far away. And during the height of COVID, we were able to connect online as the world shut down. Yet, when we step back, we can see the ways in which this same technology has wedged a distance between us. We text instead of call, or we don't even text. We just passively check social feeds. When things get challenging or when we feel bored, we can simply tune out. It's so easy to just not respond and ignore one another. We ghost each other. With a few clicks, we disappear. We are faster to criticize each other online in ways that we would likely never do in person. We are much more isolated from one another, yet we still long for connection, maybe even more than ever. We have so many friends on Facebook and Instagram, but how many of those friends are actual friends? How many would we actually call or meet in person? Psychotherapist Esther Perel has coined a term for this, artificial intimacy. In a recent podcast, she explains that our dependence on tech and social media has weakened the muscles of relationships. We have flattened and simplified our interactions with one another, and even at times, our expectations of ourselves. We look for easy answers online. In the words of Perel, it's as if we are participating in a kind of assisted living in which we are assisted by a host of predictive technologies. These technologies are basically saying, you don't have to know. I will know for you. I'll recommend the next song to listen to, who to date, where to eat. And you may think having Google to turn to should make us feel more at ease, because we are neutralizing the unpredictable. We are taking away some of the anxiety of not knowing. We turn to Google with our questions, especially when we are stressed out, tired, worn down, and really want an answer fast. We might ask, how do I calm my child down? How do I know when my relationship is in trouble? How do I live a healthy life? On the one hand, it's empowering to be able to turn to something at any time of day and get some kind of answer, especially in moments of anxiety. But in turning to tech to try to answer complex questions, we most often find ourselves more anxious, less confident in the answer. It's not meaningful when it doesn't come from the wisdom of our lived experience. The Torah implores us, choose life. And for Jews, choosing life is to be in community. Life is with people. We need embodied engagement. We need to connect directly with others. Moreover, our tradition insists that true connection between people demands responsibility for one another. Kol Yisrael Aravim Zebazeh, all of Israel is responsible for one another, is a central tenet of our religion. Yet, we are becoming less skilled, less practiced in the ways of being there for one another. We have become less competent at intimacy. Our digital connections have lowered our expectations for what it means to be in relationship. The rules of online engagement have fundamentally changed the ways in which we interact. After her mother died, a woman posted a notice on Facebook. She received many responses, comments of condolences, and sad emojis, but very few people made the effort to pick up the phone and call her to offer comfort directly. She felt adrift and alone in her mourning, compounding her grief. Friends she had known for decades simply felt that the posts were sufficient in offering support, not because they didn't care, but because in this cultural moment, we have become so attuned to the shorthand of social media that we can forget there are times when posted messages are not enough. Our interactions over social media generally flatten the potential of our encounters. After all, we can only present the smallest slice of who we are. Even if we wanted to put forward a more nuanced, more honest depiction of self, it's impossible to represent the fullness of ourselves online. This moment, as we begin Rosh Hashanah, we focus on wholeness and integration. We direct our attention towards taking an honest accounting of ourselves. The entire Torah is based on stories and laws that teach us how to be a person in relationship with ourselves, with others, with God, and with all of creation. We learn both positive and negative lessons, who we want to emulate and who chose the wrong path. Our matriarch, Rebecca, offers the positive example of generosity when she personally draws water from a well for a perfect stranger, a slave, and 10 camels. Our matriarch, Rachel, offers the negative example of scheming with Jacob to steal Esau's birthright and blessing. Both matriarchs give us insight into the complexity of the human character. Torah embraces conflict. We see everything in Torah. We are witness to wrong decisions, terrible actions, and emotionally wrought situations. We don't smooth these out. We hold these stories up to the light and view them from every angle. When Abraham takes Isaac to Mount Moriah to be sacrificed, We don't smooth out the narrative. It is one of the most challenging stories in biblical literature, but we don't ignore or reinvent it. We hold it up. We look at every minute detail. We study commentaries that wrestle with this text from across the centuries and around the world. We embrace the struggle. When the Jews wandered in the desert, Moses lost control and in a fit of anger, hit a rock to bring out water for the Israelites instead of speaking to it as God had commanded him. If Moses were alive today and this episode was relayed on social media, would we cancel him? We are all flawed. We all make mistakes. Torah teaches they, that is all of humanity, are made to stumble in their ways. We all stumble. Can you imagine if you didn't need to do the work of teshuvah? If suddenly you were told, you don't need to repent or reflect on your misdeeds, you no longer have to struggle through remembering all of your regrets, asking for forgiveness, realigning yourself with your deepest values, you have automatic dispensation, as if you are turning a new page. Now, if this was an option, how many of us would accept this offer? And how would we feel if we did? The truth is, we need teshuvah. Teshuvah allows us to shift our energy, to step back and gain perspective on our lives. Without this process of teshuvah, we would not feel secure in our path or confident in our decisions. We need to acknowledge our mistakes and missteps in order to reset our course. We have to engage in struggle in order to know who we are. This is a part of the existential reality of being human. We can't simply skip tension, upset, conflict, and contradiction. To be human is to be bound by our limitations and our ultimate vulnerability. To be alive is to know that one day we will die. As we read in our liturgy, we who are mortal are like a flower that must fade, a shadow moving on, a cloud passing by, mere dust on the wind. We live in an unpredictable, often chaotic world. We can feel so powerless. Like the blackbird in Lennon McCartney's song, we are singing in the dead of the night with our broken wings, waiting for the moment of change. We reach for the moments when we can make choices and act as agents of our own fate. When we can change, even though we don't know what tomorrow will bring. Rosh Hashanah gives us the opportunity to dance in this paradox. This is the time to move from artificial intimacy to deep connection. This is the time to honor our relationships in their full complexity. Every morning, we read a prayer that reminds us of what really matters. It says, "These acts are of value beyond measure. They are honoring one's father and mother, engaging in deeds of compassion, arriving early for study morning and evening, welcoming guests, visiting the sick, providing for the wedding couple, accompanying the dead for burial, being devoted in prayer, making peace among people, and the study of Torah encompasses them all." This prayer is like an ancient list of what's important. It helps us set our daily intentions. At its heart, this prayer is a meditation on honoring relationships by being active in each other's lives. Tonight, we engage in the work of teshuva as a community. We ask for forgiveness, not just for ourselves, but for each other. The energy of our prayers is exponentially enhanced by being together. We are spiritually enriched by each other's presence. A rabbi asks his students, "When is it at dawn that one can tell light from darkness?" One student replied, "When I can tell a goat from a donkey?" "No," answered the rabbi. Another said, "When I can tell a palm tree from a fig." "No," answered the rabbi again. "Well, then what is the answer?" his students pressed him. "Only when you can look into the face of every human being and see your brother and your sister. Only then have you seen the light. All else is darkness." Underneath, we all have brokenness, a history of mistakes, regrets, and insecurities. We all have uncertainty. This day compels us to admit these parts of ourselves privately, publicly, to invite the fullness of who we are, and to make room for the vulnerabilities of others. In doing so, we might find a new sense of freedom. In releasing our tightly held selves, we may forge deeper connections with others. As we engage in this work side by side, may we soar into the new year with a renewed sense of connection, well-being, joy, and freedom. Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to be free.